draw like a horse named McCraw from the cartoon. Boom, shalak, lock, boom, shalak, lock, boom.
About enough of that. Okay, it's Tuesday. It is 4:30 ish. Yeah, sure, why not? And that means it is time for In the Cage with Bards, Vancouver's preeminent mixed martial arts program. And unless this decision gets left in the hands of the judges, I am still Carlin Bardsley. A huge week for news in the sport. We've got recaps from all three shows of interest this past weekend. A look at the huge card this weekend, headlined by George Rush St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck. And there's so much to do and so little time to do it. That is the, that is the scape of the holiday season, isn't it? So let's just jump right in, shall we? The biggest news in the country as far as MMA goes is that the UFC has officially announced that they will make their Ontario debut at Toronto's Rogers Centre, formerly known as the Sky Dome, and will always be known to me as the Sky Dome. I hate everything Rogers, but that's okay. UFC 131 will take place at the 69,000-seat arena on April the 30th and will likely shatter all North American MMA attendance and live gate records. No fights have been announced currently, but rumors are already swirling that if George St. Pierre wins his fight with Josh Koscheck this weekend and retains his welterweight title, he may be thrown in the main event in a super fight against middleweight champion Anderson the Spider Silva. That fight would have no trouble selling out a near 70,000-seat venue and would provide a definitive answer about who is, pound for pound, the best fighter in the sport. Just thinking about it puts me in a state of bliss. But before we look too far in the future, let's have a look at what happened this past weekend in the UFC, which was Jonathan Brookins defeating Michael Johnson at the Ultimate Finale on Saturday and becoming this season's Ultimate Fighter. Brookins was able to withstand a devastating first round from Johnson before hitting the comeback switch and taking the final two rounds to come out ahead on the scorecards and win the guaranteed UFC contract. Johnson came out of the gate blazing and lit up Brookins with a much improved stand-up attack than what he showed in the show, and really just knocked him all over the cage in the opening stanza. He was unable to finish Brookins, however. And in the second round, Brookins was able to use his wrestling ability to turn the tide. It was almost a near perfect negative of most the way most people thought the fight was going to go. We had Johnson throwing leather, and we had Brookins relying on wrestling. It was a little surreal, but really fun to watch. Over the last two rounds, Brookins was able to control Johnson on the floor and win a clear-cut decision. Fan favorite Stefan Bonner picked up a victory in his light heavyweight bout against Team Krokop member Igor Prokryach, but what most people will remember are the fouls called by referee Steve Mazzagatti. Bonner looked to be the better fighter in all situations and appeared to be in cruise control in the second frame. When both fighters hit the floor, Prokryach delivered a few illegal knees to the back of Bonner's head. Mazzagatti barked out a warning. but he did not stop the action. Nevertheless, he deducted a point at the close of the frame rather than during the course of the bout, as is normally the case. I wasn't even aware there was a point taken away. I was so mad I was screaming at the TV for Mazzagatti not taking a point away. Apparently they did during the break and I just wasn't aware of it. But it looked really just surreal when watching it on television. In the third, Mazzagatti warned Bonner for punches to the back of the head. And then minutes later, with Bonner still delivering punches from top position, Mazzagatti stopped the fight to issue a deduction to Bonner. While perhaps justified, the timekeeper did not see the referee's signal and the round ended while Mazzagatti was deducting the point. It was an incredibly bizarre series of events, but it all added up to a unanimous decision win for Bonner, 29-26 across the board. More importantly, it gives us something to add to the Mazzagatti WTF reel, which just grows by every card, it seems. In middleweight action, grappling wizard Damian Maya was able to nullify Kendall Grove's reach advantage and pace himself to a decision victory. The lanky Grove did his best to strike from distance in all three frames. He's 6'6" and weighs in 185 in the middleweight division. He's just a really, really long, all limbs basically. But it didn't seem to work out for him. Maya showed his improved striking. He avoided absorbing any significant strikes while also countering well with punches back to the head. The Brazilian didn't shy completely away from his world-class grappling as he took Grove down in both the first and second frames. Each time here looks from the mount and rear mount positions, but Grove showed a lot of heart. He was spinning around and he defended well enough to avoid a submission, which I guess is some kind of a moral victory, but Damian Maya really just kind of wrapped him up there. It wasn't as close to making it sound, to be honest with you. Just wasn't able to counter. But in the third, Grove did come out on fire. I'll give him that much. He was looking to push the pace. He had the crowd firmly behind him. He tried to go for broke on the feet. It just wasn't happening. Maya is just flat out better than Kendall Grove, and that's the way it ended. In welterweight action, Rick the Horror Story, I'm sorry, I just love that nickname, painted the first loss on Johnny Hendricks' career, also by decision. You may notice a pattern here. Story got the best of the striking exchanges and was able to keep the fight standing, as it was expected that Hendricks would dominate with his wrestling. I'll be honest, I wasn't watching the fight with full focus, as I was still shocked and appalled by the decision from the previous televised fight, which was the first ever featherweight fight televised in the UFC, and saw Leonard Garcia take a ridiculous split decision victory over Nam Phan. I like Leonard Garcia. I thought his fight earlier this year with Chang Sung Jung was just incredible. His fight in the UFC against Roger Huerta. I'm a big Leonard Garcia fan, but this made my stomach turn as far as judging goes. The opening round, it was probably the closest. Both fighters were willing to engage on the feet. Garcia was throwing bombs, and by bombs, I mean he was really just kind of winging his arm around from almost a completely spun around position. He's got a really awkward striking style. But Phan was able to string together several combinations. We had some leg kicks mixed in as well. But, both fighters really almost turned it into a boxing match in the first round. Second round was a clear-cut Nam Phan round. The Ultimate Fighter 12 Team Koscheck member, he was digging in frequently to the body, and he also delivered a few very impressive head kicks. A kick to the body saw Garcia hit the floor, and then Phan took the back for much of the round, though he was unable to finish. The third round featured Nam Phan. There we go. I'm going to get that right. I love that guy. I got to really work on that. Moving forward with aggressive power shots, he managed to avoid most of the shots that Garcia was winging away at him. He was delivering counters. Every punch that Garcia threw came from very far outside, and Phan was able to block it, and he was able to counter just with the straight rights and lefts right up the middle, right up the pipe there. And the final tally on strikes in the fight read 116-70 in favor of Nam Phan. The decision was read as a split decision victory for Garcia, and both fighters looked dumbfounded. The crowd started chanting something I can't repeat on the radio, and even Garcia's trainer, Greg Jackson, appeared to give a shrug as if to say, well, I guess we'll take it. Garcia even agreed with the crowd's sentiments in the post-fight interview. The aftermath saw Dana White, he did pay Nam Phan his win bonus anyway, which tells you how he saw the fight. It was, as close to highway robbery as one can get in mixed martial arts. And it sent color commentator Joe Rogan into a tirade during the next fight. Let's have a listen here as to what Joe Rogan had to say about it.
a tremendous amount of pressure on fighters not knowing, you know, what kind of officiating you're getting. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Dana White said that.
It's gross. You should be able to leave in the hands of the judges. Should be able to just fight.
Good body shot.
And we should point out that is the situation because of the Nevada State Athletic Commission. That's what it is. It has nothing to do with the UFC. And people keep saying, oh, the UFC is corrupt. We have no say whatsoever in who judges these fights. And, you know, Keith Kaiser has denied that there's an issue. I think there's a huge, huge issue. And I think he needs a clean house. There's a few very good judges surrounded by a bunch of incompetent morons that know absolutely nothing about the sport. And they got to do something about that because it's ruining MMA. And it's making people think that this sport is corrupt. And it has nothing to do with corruption. It's sheer, complete, total incompetence. You know, so folks, send emails, get online, write blogs, do what you got to do. We can't do anything.
For the winner by split decision, Leonard Papa Garcia.
Leonard Garcia by split decision.
The audience has just let everybody in America know how they feel about that decision.
Man, I was thinking, Asian brother can't get no love, man.
So there you go. Nam fan thinks an Asian brother can't get no love. Hard to disagree with him after a ridiculous decision like that. And the comments there that were being made by Joe Rogan with regards to Keith Kaiser and the Nevada State Athletic Commission were being made during the next fight, which was Rick Story against Johnny Hendricks. So clearly I wasn't the only one having trouble paying attention to that fight after that. But, I agree with Joe Rogan 100%. Most of these, and I got to be careful here. I can't paint everyone with the same brush. But a lot of these MMA judges nowadays are leftover relics from boxing. It's the reason that we have a 10-point must scoring system in MMA to begin with. When, I'll say it, it makes no effing sense to have a 10-point must scoring system for mixed martial arts. It was done because it's done in boxing. And, back in the dark ages when MMA was not allowed on TV, was barely allowed on the radio, for people like me, it was something that was, a pacifier for the boxing people, to say, okay, listen, we'll do it your way. We'll try to make it more like boxing so it's more palatable for you. And as the sport has grown and has evolved, it makes less and less sense to kowtow to these, boxing relics, I call them. And, clearly these are people that they don't understand the sport. There's no other way to describe it. There's no other way to describe a decision like the Leonard Garcia and Nanfan decision other than to say it was made by uneducated people in the sport of MMA and people that, watch boxing and that's their livelihood. And, that's great. Let them be boxing judges. I don't have a problem with that. But, a good thing that we did here in Vancouver, and we have a terrible record when it comes to doing things right with MMA in Vancouver. That's another subject. Mirko Mladenovic, the former Vancouver Athletic Commission director, he did a really good thing when he picked the judges for the UFC event, UFC 115, Liddell versus Franklin, this past June. He picked people who had a background in combat sports. He had Bill Mahood as a judge, a former UFC veteran. He had people who know the sport. And, Mirko takes a lot of flack from people. I like the guy. I think Mirko's great. But, the way that he did it is the way, in my opinion, it should be done. Have people who are veterans of the sport, judge what's going on in the cage. People who've been there. People who understand. Not, someone who's, in their mid-60s and, their only memory of UFC is John McCain calling it human cockfighting in 1995. It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, rant over. Nevada State Athletic Commission Director Keith Kaiser did respond to Joe Rogan's rant with the following, quote, "If Joe Rogan wants to get on the air and call people names, that's his business. I'm not going to waste time responding to that. They always say that the UFC has nothing to do with judging. Well, guess what? They've got a big fight coming up in Canada called Koscheck versus St. Pierre. The UFC and Mark Ratner are flying Tony Weeks up there as a judge. Come on, Joe. How about some honesty? They've taken 90% of our officials overseas with them, as they should. This is not a knock on Dana White and Mark Ratner. They know what they're doing." And Tony Weeks, the reason he was name-checked is he was one of the two judges that scored that fight for Garcia over Nam Phan. And I don't know what he saw. I don't, you know, if they're flying him up to Montreal to be a judge, that I think says a lot. You know, that says a lot about how far judging needs to advance in the sport, quite frankly. And if we have any shady decisions going on, I guarantee you people are going to be looking at what Tony Weeks wrote down on his card. Joe Rogan never got to take anything lying down. He fired back with a post on the MMA website, The Underground. And, you know, this is going to be a little long-winded, so bear with me here. Quote, "We all know there's a big problem with judging in MMA. We all know Kaiser's pretending there's nothing wrong with having a bunch of people with no martial arts training and no understanding of the sport judging it on a professional level. There's only one way for me to bring the maximum attention to this issue, and that's to voice my opinion on air during a live television show where I know that millions of people are going to listen to it. I understand that this upset him, but he's had plenty of time to correct all these judging issues, and yet he denies there's a real problem and continues to employ people that to judge important fights that are ignorant of many of the details of mixed martial arts. I also found it quite hilarious that he denies the NSAC is 100% to blame for this judging situation and even brought up that we're taking NSC-appointed judges to Canada. The NSAC, for all its flaws, is the most important ruling body in combat sports. To bring judges that weren't appointed and approved by the NSAC would open up a whole new can of worms. The question will also come up as to who appoints those other judges. What is UFC's relationship with them? Kaiser is a politician, and one of the biggest issues with him is that he's not willing to admit that he's not done the best job possible with the best intentions of the sport and its participants in mind. This calculated denial of a problem is the reason why these same judges are turning in bad decisions over and over again. In order for him to correct the problem, he's going to have to admit that he's been wrong in employing these people, and he's not willing to do that. Mixed martial arts is a far more complicated sport than boxing, and in order for someone to be educated in the subtle details that are playing out in a fight, they have to have some martial arts experience themselves. There are plenty of fans out there who would do a far better job than these people that he's got working for him that have been grandfathered in from the boxing community. To judge MMA on the highest level is a huge honor and responsibility and should be bestowed upon people that appreciate, that honor and appreciate and understand every single aspect of the sport. Anything less is an insult to these great athletes that are dedicating their lives to compete in the toughest sport in the world, and an insult to the fans that have to be disappointed with one terrible decision after the next. Thankfully, we live in a time where the fans have an option to get their opinions out there. I've seen all the positive support online, and I urge you guys to keep it up. Please keep up the emails and keep up the blog posts. The only way this thing is going to change is if people in charge feel like they have to do something about it to keep their jobs intact." So in short, the controversy continues. You know, God bless you, Joe Rogan, for saying it. You know, it's a shame that, you know, it has to come down to a UFC color commentator to bring this out. But like he says, the people that are in charge are bureaucrats, and it's impossible to get a bureaucrat and a politician to do anything for the common good unless they feel their own job is on the line. We'll be back after the break to look at the other show that took place Saturday night, one that people will remember for the fights instead of the controversy.
CITR would like to thank everyone who made a donation during Fun Drive 2010. Without your support, our little station would not be able to keep producing amazing volunteer-powered radio. Radio that strives to do something different, to introduce you to your new favorite song, your new favorite band, your new favorite sound. By harnessing the power of dozens of volunteer hosts as diverse as the programming they are dedicated to creating, we aim to give you something completely unique, and we could not do it without you. You are simply the best. CITR listeners, better than all the rest. You're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone.
Really? We're playing Tina Turner to thank our donators? All right, cool. Nevertheless, we're still here at In the Cage with Bards on CITR Radio 101.9. Strikeforce had their Henderson versus Babalu card Saturday night, filled with entertaining and exciting KOs and no refereeing or judging controversy. How refreshing. In the headliner, Dan Henderson cemented his chance for a shot at the Strikeforce 205-pound title after dispatching Renato Babalu Sobral in a rematch 10 years in the making. Henderson needed less than 2 minutes to find a home for his big right hand, which has been his trademark over the course of his career. And once he did, Babalu was sent reeling to the canvas. He tried to find a leg to hold on for survival. Not to be. Henderson just stood over him in the open guard and just pounded away. 1-2-3 punch combo that rocks Sobral, forcing the referee to intervene and call a stop to the bout at 153 of the first round. The performance was a far cry from the Henderson that fans saw in his last middleweight performance in Strikeforce against Jake Shields. And it was obvious that the trip back up to 205 made a huge difference. Henderson said, "My body felt better than it has in a long time. I was trying to be patient. I knew it was going to come. It just happened faster than I expected." In the co-headliner, Paul Sentex Daly proved that he is as explosive as his name as he welcomed Scott Hands of Steel Smith to the welterweight division with a vicious knockout that saw Smith wind up face planted on the canvas. Daly executed a perfect display of striking, mixing in stinging leg kicks and arrow straight combos until he needed his big weapon, the left hook. After stunning and backing up Smith with a couple of short left hooks, the dangerous Hands of Steel came plodding forward with a big right hand. One thing about Scott Smith, he's too dumb to know when to quit. You know, he is Rocky Balboa in every sense of the word that way. But Daly took one step to his left and delivered an epic, huge left hook that dropped Smith where he stood, completely unconscious. After the fight, Daly said he wanted to fight KJ Nunes, then a welterweight title shot against Nick Diaz. "If I'm Strikeforce CEO Scott Coker, I put Daly and Diaz together right now because KJ Nunes has really no defined place in the welterweight division. He's just, you know, a good boxer that happens to pop up every now and again." But the trifecta of bone-rattling KOs, it came to fruition. Ruthless Robbie Lawler made short work of MMA legend and former Olympic silver medalist Matt the Law Lindland. Lindland chose to stand with Lawler early, which proved to be a terrible decision. Lindland has, in the past anyway, been very adept at dodging big shots, and he did early, but after coming forward and eating a jab from Lawler, Lindland countered, and so did Lawler, with a crushing right hook that dropped Lindland and gave him the old straight legs. And that may have been the end of Matt Lindland's career. He's had a great career, great veteran, and like I said, Olympic silver medalist. But I think maybe it's time for Matt to take some time off. Maybe just focus on running Team Quest in Portland. I don't want to see the guy turn into Ken Shamrock, where he's just losing brain cells every single week. In heavyweight action, Mike Kyle almost shocked the world. Kyle took a fight on extremely short notice, gave up over 40 pounds against Antonio Bigfoot Silva, but did not let that stop him as he charged right out of the gate and nearly immediately dropped the Brazilian giant with a right hand. Kyle kept hammering away on Silva for the next 4 minutes, but was unable to put the Brazilian giant away. Silva came out in the second stanza, worked Kyle to the ground, and nearly finished the fight with a tight anaconda choke. Kyle found a way out of trouble, but as he worked to retain guard on his back, Silva stood over him and delivered a brutal ground-and-pound barrage, quickly forcing an end to the bout. After the fight, Silva's message for Strikeforce heavyweight champ Alistair Overeem: "Come on, Overeem, stop running." I can't wait for that fight. That is going to be so much fun. The telecast opened with an exciting decision victory from Ovince St. Preux over dangerous striker Benji Raddick. St. Preux dominated most of the first two rounds and outlasted Raddick in the third to put his name on the map in the Strikeforce 205 division. The only thing I didn't care for was Mauro Ranallo referring to St. Preux as OSP in a twist on George St. Pierre's GSP nickname. I'm a huge Mauro fan. I think, he's, if not the best, definitely one of the best. But St. Preux, not quite there yet. I don't want to hear him compared to GSP yet. After the break, we're looking at this Saturday's UFC 124. Stick around.
Love. That's a big word for having only four letters and one syllable. It means a lot, and once it's out there, you can't just take it back. But we're ready to say it. We love you, our loyal listeners, who donated generously during our 2010 fund drive. Thanks to your support, we can continue to keep our station running smoothly. Our library digitization project has begun and will be finished in a few months' time. This means we'll be able to satisfy your song requests in the blink of an eye, and that our ever-expanding music library can grow to its full potential. We couldn't have done it without you. You, whom we love. We love you.
Okay, that was something. Well, the MMA fan base of Canada is tingling with anticipation for this Saturday on pay-per-view when George St. Pierre will step into the cage with Josh Koscheck for a second time, this time on GSP's home turf at the Bell Centre in Montreal. GSP dominated Koscheck in their first encounter back at UFC 74, and on paper, there seems to be no reason why GSP can't do it again. GSP is ever evolving and even has added boxing training with world famous trainer Freddie Roach. He's worked with most of the best in the sport, including Manny Pacquiao. GSP has now added that to his resume. GSP's friend and training partner, Jonathan Goulet, was on the show last week, as you may remember, as I know you were listening. You better have been listening. But what Goulet said is that GSP just needs to believe in his boxing, and he will be able to stop Koscheck without going to the ground. Roach predicted a GSP KO coming from a left hook. Koscheck does have world-class wrestling skills, but given the way GSP dominated him on the ground in the first fight, one wonders if Kos can even match up with him in that department. My prediction, GSP wins by stoppage, or if Kos somehow defies the odds and scores the upset, I predict the biggest riot Montreal has seen in quite some time, and that is saying something. Also on the card in the heavyweight division is a clash between Stefan Skyscraper Struve and Sean McCorkle. Struve has made a name for himself in the UFC with a 4-2 record, with his only losses coming against top-of-the-division guys Roy Nelson and Junior Dos Santos. McCorkle, on the other hand, is more known for his, quote, internet personality and trash-talking than anything else. He did score a victory in his only UFC appearance against a washed-up Mark Hunt, but if I were a betting man, I'd throw money down on Struve and his reach advantage and his ability to positionally control even a large guy like McCorkle. In lightweight action, Joe Daddy Stevenson takes on former Ultimate Fighter winner Mack Danzig. Stevenson's got a wrestling advantage, he's got great takedowns and a nice guillotine choke, while Danzig has the advantage in his jiu-jitsu and is extremely motivated after his extremely controversial loss to Matt Wyman that took place right here in our fair city in June. Tough one to call. Danzig may very well be fighting for his job, which could lead to him pushing the pace more than usual. Former welterweight title contender Thiago Alves is bracing for a tilt against John Doomsday Howard. Howard had won 7 straight before losing via TKO to Jake Ellenberger this summer, and a win over Alves would propel him to the upper echelon of the division. Howard may be distracted, however, as lately his focus seems to have been a war of words with fellow contender Anthony Rumble Johnson. For his part, most MMA fans are familiar with the skills and resume of Alves, but Alves may be his own worst enemy, with his continual problems making the 170-pound weight limit. Excuse me. Alves is coming off back-to-back losses to GSP and John Fitch, and this could be a do-or-die scenario for the man known as the Pitbull. Being in Montreal, the card will also be stocked with Canadians, with Toronto's Mark Bocek set to engage in a ground battle with Dustin Hazlett, the best name in the sport. I'm sorry, I love this guy's name. Kenora, Ontario's Jesse Bongfelt will try to build on his 7-fight winning streak when he meets Rafael Natal. Toronto's Sean Pearson takes on Matthew Riddle. The veteran as tough as a Winnipeg winter, El Dirte. Joe Dirksen takes on Dan Miller. And Dartmouth's Nova Scotia submission wizard, TJ Grant, will test his skills against Ricardo the Big Dog Almeida. All right, I'm going to come back and wrap things up right after this.
Thanks to everyone who made a donation to Fun Drive 2010. Your continued support of CITR shows that there are people out there looking for something different on the dial. A station not concerned with commercial or mainstream content, but rather programming that covers every conceivable genre of music. Programming that shines a light on exciting local talent. Programming focusing on Canadian content and gender balance that doesn't include Celine, Avril, or Shania. Thank you for donating to Fun Drive 2010.
All right, finally a Fun Drive thank you commercial that I actually enjoyed. Okay, just about to get out of here now. West Coast Promotions did stage a card at the Red Robinson Theater at Boulevard Casino Coquitlam this past Friday. I unfortunately could not make the event. I had a previous commitment, but I was told it was a hell of a lot of fun. And here are the results courtesy of BCMMAA.com. In the main event, my favorite amateur fighter in British Columbia, Tricky Nick Marinos, defeated Sean DeVries by submission by a guillotine choke in the first round of 58 seconds and is now the West Coast Amateur Welterweight Champion in addition to his IFC Welterweight title. The co-main event at 205 saw Derek Mark defeat Mike DuPont by judge's decision. The main card saw the 125-pound women's fight. Stephanie Egging defeated Cheryl Tran by referee stoppage. In the heavyweight division, Jonas Kwiatkowski defeated Richard Avanochko by TKO. Also in the heavyweight division, Robert Palmer defeated Jimmy Foster by TKO in the first round. At 155, Murray Sogan defeated Alex Houston by submission. And at 145, Oliver Vyajadeff defeated Ronald Diaz by unanimous decision. I want to apologize to Oliver for massacring his name right then. Okay, that is it for me. I have had a hell of a lot of fun today, as I always do. I'm actually going on hiatus for the next month or so. I'll be heading down to Kansas City, visit some friends and family down there, and eat a lot of food and, you know, rediscover my love for really good steaks and farmer's daughters. But I just want to say Merry Christmas to everyone out there. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Have a Kwesi Kwanzaa. Happy New Year's, all the rest of that stuff. Especially to everyone here at CITR that allow me to, you know, really just kind of run my mouth for no real reason. Our station manager, Brenda Gruneau, music director, Luke Meat, program coordinator, Bryce Dunn, that really, really hot promotions girl, Bronwyn, who I've got a secret crush on, who it probably isn't that secret anymore. But, I love doing the show here, and I feel really fortunate that the people here are giving me a forum, and it just makes me feel all warm and bubbly and blissful inside. So whether you're a CITR person, whether you're just a loyal listener, whether you're an overzealous hot dog vendor or whatever else, thanks, man. Okay, that's it for me. I'm going to go out now with a Christmas carol. Why not? I can do it. And it's a little mock-up of a Feliz Navidad. It's Bob Rivers doing the Police Stop My Car, which used to happen to me a lot. So I can relate. At any rate, I'm Carlin Bardsley. The bell has sounded.
Police stop my car. Police stop my car. The police made me stop. Walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Police stop my car. Police stop my car. The police made me stop. Walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always pull me over Christmas. They say they're just making sure that there's no open bottles in my car. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always pull me over Christmas. They say they're just making sure that there's no open bottles in my car. Police roadblock. Police roadblock. Police roadblock. I can smell their donuts as they smell my breath. Police roadblock. Police roadblock. Police roadblock. I can smell their donuts as they smell my breath. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always.
for me over Christmas. They're gonna let me out on bail this Christmas from the bottom of their hearts. Police lock me up. Police lock me up. The police lock me up. 'Cause when I knew I knew a 2.1.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.